This is the beginning of class 10.
Sanshi Bhurki Jushin Eto Jam Rira Vinshi Nyende Nyampadi Sangye Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogu Nanda Shimla Jepa Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodamma Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyatsu Chi Dagi Chunyen Pipe Sunangki Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodamma Jubadu dami kasuchi Dagi chumyen kipe sunangi Jola penche sangye jubasho Sangye chudam sangye chudama Jubadu dami
because of the notes, but I didn't get what it meant.
I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
Basically, it's this: a small capacity person, which means lesser capacity person, is practicing in order to avoid going to one of the three realms of suffering after he dies. Mm. Person of small scope or capacity. Is to try to avoid going to the three realms of suffering after you die. So those are what?
The lower realms.
Yeah.
Hell.
Yeah.
Hungry ghosts.
Can you see them?
One.
Only one. You can only see animals. Do you believe that you could be born as an animal? Probably not. Or you believe it, or you have some kind of a you have some kind of inclination to believe it, but do you have any logical proof which is so good that you could prove it to someone else?
No.
Unlikely. We'll try to work on that next course. But it takes a lot of study just to reach the stage of a lesser person, a lesser scope. It starts with what? What were the two things in the lesser scope that we studied?
Understanding.
I guess and calm.
Yeah. I mean, as a preliminary, you saw how lucky you are to be alive. You know, what good chance you have right now. And then the two meditations we had, there were one was on death. Can you perceive that directly? Death. Yeah. I mean, you can perceive it directly in others, and you can perceive it correctly with logic in yourself. Yeah. I mean, you can perceive it directly in others, and you can perceive it correctly with logic in yourself. So you can see your death. You cannot see your death with your eyes. You can see your death with your reasoning, with your capacity to think. In a foolproof, airtight way, you can perceive your death. It's something that you can prove to yourself. Without any great leaps of faith, it's logical. It's you perceive it in others. We have no evidence that anyone hasn't died. We're getting older. The people around you have started to die. You know three or four friends, or 10 or 20 friends who've died. You have no reason to believe that you would be any different. If you do a qigong about death, this is a fact. Your own death is a fact. Definitely you will not resemble yourself after death. You will not be very similar to what you are now. That you can perceive. As well as you can see, not be very similar to what you are now. That you can perceive. as well as you can see with your eyes, someone else died. He's aware of how fortunate he is now. He's aware that he's going to die. And he's considering what it would be like after he dies. And now, I told you this famous, this is why Hamlet, that thing is so famous, to be or not to be. The question is, should I kill myself or not? The to be or not to be means, should I exist or not? Should I kill myself? And he goes through, it's a beautiful, you should reread it sometime. And he starts to do a qigong about it. He says, yeah, that would be nice, you know. Really, this life is just suffering. And everything is pain. And is it better for me to just stay here and suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune? You know, see my karma results go up and down like a roller coaster. Or should I just put an end to it and thereby dream? And then he says, dream. Oh, wait a minute. What if something goes on? You know, and then he says, he starts to worry. He says, what will happen after I die? Maybe I will, doesn't even qualify as the lesson, as the minimum Buddhist practice. Because I'm not really doing it thinking about my death, motivated by my death and what's going to be after that. So I don't even qualify as a long-range practitioner. You know? I mean, in a real sense. And there were ways of teaching Lam Rim that the teacher and the students would go to a cave until they really had death awareness. You know, and they wouldn't go on to the next step for a year or 2 years. There were traditions of doing it that way. But that would take us too long.
Michael, what were you saying, death? I mean, we can intellectually understand it, but you mean feel that we're going to die?
I think to act every day and every hour as if you truly believe that you had to die and that it could happen in the next hour and that only Dharma would help you then. Do we act like that? Do we base our life? Do we behave based on that? Because those three are true. Those three are, at least the first two are undeniable. It's undeniable that you must die, and it's undeniable that you have no idea.
Yeah, but everybody, I mean,
today.
A lot of people, I think, will accept that. The difference,
yeah, so
I think, is the feeling and the acting on upon every moment in the consciousness. That's the difference, not understanding it. Wouldn't you say so?
No,
I mean,
it's
you
fine.
Want everybody
you have to understand
understand
it to act on it.
But
when I say understand,
I'm going to die.
But you have to internalize it. You're not behaving every moment,
okay,
as if
so
you're going to die today.
Okay.
When you do, you've reached the first person's level. But we don't. And I don't know if we ever will. I must be very fortunate. Unless you meditate on it. And then your behavior would change. If you truly believed, Pabonga says you don't pack up big suitcases if you know you're leaving in 5 minutes. You know what I mean? If you know you're leaving. Hindu religions have the word, or most of them have the word moksha, meaning freedom. They all believe there is a freedom from cyclic existence. You know, they accept the idea. They don't claim that this is the method to reach that. They don't agree that what we're studying is the method to reach that. They each have their own unusual idea about how to reach that. Some of them said, if you could meditate your whole life, jump off a cliff onto a three-pointed spear, and one went through here, and one went through here, and one went through here, with the right attitude, you would reach nirvana. Okay, and they get a little bit better off than that. So Tathagata Lokiya means, first of all, to get the very wish to achieve freedom from this kind of suffering.
Could you repeat that?
To develop the wish to be free from suffering, or to achieve freedom, I should say. To develop the wish to achieve freedom.
From all cyclic
existence. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Low means again?
Low means the idea or mind. To develop the state of mind, you can say, in which you wish to achieve freedom. It means to develop the wish to get out of here. Completely. And the text says here, Chepe Mingon Dunya Kundigo, Jebe Ningo means no matter how much you experience the pleasures of this life, you can't be satisfied. And it's worse than that. And he goes on, he has a long commentary about it. I think we can translate this sometime. This is Papongka's commentary to Tsongkhapa's text. And he says, the nature of any kind of happiness in this life is that it makes you more thirsty. And no one is ever satisfied. The nature of most every worldly thing that goes right is that it not okay. And this was apparently some corruption in Mongolia that has started a long time ago, and now it's a problem. And then he said, they just haven't seen, the thing is they haven't seen that it's not a desirable thing. See what I mean? They just didn't see that yet. That's why you become alone. It's not that you're trying to deny yourself something. It's just that you see that it's not going to bring you happiness or contentment over, in the long run. It's just not, it's not its nature.
So everybody should become monks and nuns, is that what you're saying? I think, what happens, isn't that a contradiction to say, oh, your parents, you should be, like, they're so good to you because they gave you life? What about that? I mean, isn't there a little bit of a contradiction there? I mean, you're saying this life is precious, but let's become monks and nuns and we're not having any kids anymore.
Oh, they got these test tubes
now. You still have to do some work on that.
You mean, Michael, like, everything...
You don't want me to give you details.
Everything is unhappiness except for becoming a monk or a nun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with that.
You debate it. I mean, you find something. You tell me.
Isn't it? It's got nothing to do with the person, the wife or the husband or the glass of... wonderful juice or something, isn't it just something in the mind of that person which makes them a samsaric person as opposed to a liberated person?
In the long
person.
Run, yes.
That's all there is to it.
Who is the wealthiest person in the world?
It's samsara. It's a state of mind, really. It's got nothing to do with those.
What is samsara? You know the definition.
It's not a state of mind.
Afflicted with the five contaminated heaps.
No, you got to know what you're trying to get out of before you can get out of it. Most people never learn.
What is this? The definition then?
It's a state of mind.
Being forced to take on over and over again these five impure heaps.
You would see that he's empty. You'd see that he's not nasty by his own nature, because his wife looks at the same person and thinks he's great. You can't be nasty and great at the same time. Therefore, those two qualities can't be naturally attached to him. And it's coming from somewhere else. The appearance of him being nasty is coming from somewhere else. Then you study karma. You know that it's your perception, forced on you by your past karma. Does that allow you to see him the way his wife sees him?
No.
Would you like to see him as an angel? Yes. How can you do that? Be good.
But you also said once that the person does, in reality, if the person is nasty to you, the person is being nasty to you.
He is nasty. I've never said he was nasty.
Yeah, right.
He is empty and he is nasty. He's not real and he's really nasty.
Yeah. So
it's not a contradiction. And any other teaching about it is wrong. And if you don't believe it, take the next person who teaches anything else about emptiness and ask him if you can stick a needle. Anything in the world has these qualities. The good things in the world, the normal good things, they are not stable. They cause you all your suffering. And they make you discontented. It's their nature. It's their nature that any good thing you get, you want more.
Cause suffering, what was it?
And they make you discontented. They make you want more. So that's supposed to get this in your mind. That's supposed to trigger this, where you say, okay, I don't want these things anymore. I want something better.
When you say they make you want more, you mean more quantity of the same thing, not repeating the same experience.
I can remember when I was paid $7 an hour, and I was quite happy to get the job. I was really happy to get the job. And then 8 wasn't enough, and then 9 wasn't enough, and 10 wasn't enough, and 100,000 a year wasn't enough, and whatever. And it's human nature. And you give some Cambodian refugee a job, figure out what it is.
the whole word?
Yeah. Tena. Then I'll be short for Tena Apa, which means to determine or to figure out what it is. The root text says at this point, Namda Samba Deyu Changbayu, which means use that pure thought to push you on to what is that pure thought? The
wish to.
The wish to get out of here. Okay. What is it going to be when you get out of here? I mean, are you going to go to a different place? Is that what is samsara? If samsara is defined as having this kind of body and mind, then getting out of samsara does not involve a location change. It involves a reality change. Your own nature changes.
Comprised of different aggregates.
Pure heaps.
Yeah. That's pure all. Body and a pure mind. Totally... bliss and a body and mind, permanent.
So they say with that pure set of hoops that they describe.
As long as you understand the mental process that's going on, what's been going on to your mind, and this is what your meditation should be for the next 6 months. It's very simple. It's a simple train of thoughts, and you're going to burn it into the computer screen. It's some kind of dissatisfaction to start with. Then you decide. Well, I probably need a teacher to figure this whole thing out. I will get a teacher to figure it all out. I'll make sure he's qualified. And if he's qualified, I'll follow what he says. I'm going to die. I'm very lucky to be here. It's not very long. I have all these conditions working for me. I am going to die. What's going to happen after that? It depends on what I do. But even if I do something good and then this, I get this same kind of life again, which is extremely, the odds are extremely low. I get a life like this, but then again I'm going to have to go through the same process of ups and downs. The book says, Namdak Sambhadeya Chambayi, use this desire to get out in order to Jenda Sheshin. What is Jemba and Sheshin? Heard them before? Jemba is recollection and Sheshin is watchfulness. We had them in the practice of shamatha, of developing shamatha. But what are they aimed at in this case? Tenbei tsawa soso tarpala. The very core of Buddhist teachings, soso tarpa, the eight types of vows. The eight types of vow morality. Okay. Number eight is monk's vows. Number one is a one-day vow. Number two and three are where a layman decides to take the five vows for his life. What are the five vows? Not killing. I will not kill in my life again. Stealing. No sexual misconduct. Which is artificially concocted. Which has the function of lowering your inhibition level.
What was the first one? Fermented? Anything fermented?
Alcohol. Or drugs. I mean, and they say that. And then the Buddha in the Abhidhamma Kosha lifts up a piece of grass and says to his followers, "He, whosoever drinks the amount of alcohol that you could put on the tip of this grass, don't call yourself a Buddhist and I'm not your teacher."
Why,
Michael?
Why no alcohol?
Because it lowers, its effect is to subtly lower your ability to keep your morality.
So then the alcohol, that's what the question I had the other day for you. Europeans use a lot of wine to burn their food, but there's not really an effect of alcohol when you eat the food. So
if
that alcohol...
If it didn't have the effect to lower the function of an intoxicant, which is prohibited,
okay,
is something which lowers your ability to protect your morality.
No, I think there's a difference. You have to make a distinction between abusing things that are not necessarily designed for the specific purpose of becoming intoxicated, as for example wine or beer or what things like that, and something like cocaine or heroin, or which is designed specifically to
the Buddha said.
One is a beverage,
it's
and the other
intention,
is a...
It's about intention,
isn't it?
It's what the
alcohol
is.
What?
Just So you don't have to really fully high.
One teaspoon of wine, according to the scriptures, lowers your... It increases the odds of you breaking your morality eventually.
True,
so don't do it.
What about
can you
what
watch
if you're addicted to chocolate?
You just have one glass of wine. I mean, you get
because
you
it can rule your
no,
mind.
No, if it would lower... I mean, obviously, in an extreme case, an addiction to anything might lower your ability to not do an action which you might hurt someone to get it.
Bad enough as it
so
is.
So don't think of it as, just forget it. It's useless. I almost said a bad word. There's no benefit for you. It costs money. It's useless. It has no benefit for you. If there's a chance in 1,000 that it could make you less watchful, why bother? What's the big deal? What's so great about it?
What if you're more relaxed and then you're more watchful? What if you're overly agitated and a glass of wine makes you calm down enough to pay more attention?
Pump iron.
Use the counter breath, I think it was.
What about so? You can't speak and count your breath at the same time.
Michael, what about you? I've always found that when I start to lose it, if you say I'd rather go to another room and recollect and recall it?
Think about death.
Recollect myself.
Get
people don't like it, but if you say I have to go to the bathroom, nobody stops you. I can be in the worst meeting with my boss. He's about to say something important, and I say, "Look, you've got to go to the bathroom." And I've never had anyone say, "No, don't go, sit down." So go to the bathroom and sit down and collect yourself. Collect yourself.
So what did we say the 8 vows, types of vows?
I didn't get to that.
I'm sorry, there's
one
than
8.
Number 23.
What I'm trying to tell you is that the recollection and the watchfulness that he's mentioning here are not focused on the object of meditation. These are the same mental functions, but they are focused on your morality. They are with you throughout the day, monitoring. I like that word that you chose. They are monitoring your behavior throughout the day. Is it? Should you feel guilty? Are you a bad person? Should you, blah blah blah? Go home. Should you give up all your friends and tell them you don't want to stay with them anymore? It's not the thing. Most of the immorality that we do are things that are quite acceptable in society. Talking bad about people at work. Subtly trying to split people up. Looking at another guy's wife. I've done it, but basically I'll say this. If I remember correctly, wrong object, okay? Your mother, your sister, a nun, etc. And another person's spouse. Wrong place. In a room where there's an altar. Near a temple. Around your lama. Within earshot of other people. Etc. Wrong organ. Anal, oral, masturbation, etc. Wrong... What was the last one?
Time.
Wrong what?
Time.
Wrong time. Yeah, lady is having her period. Yeah. She's pregnant. Any time when it would hurt her physically.
Daylight.
To do it.
You mean what happens?
No open daylight.
You cannot have if you have your period. If it hurts.
What about daylight?
Well, specifically if it hurt the person. And it's just more daylight would be considered shameless in a way. It would be considered so. And that some lamas say that. The book says that. We went through, was there anything I don't remember? Homosexuality is considered sexual misconduct.
Not from the Dalai Lama side.
Not with the last, I read an article.
Oh, where
yeah.
He's explicit. I just read it today.
Yep.
Scriptures are explicit as well.
Oh, wow.
But he said it. This is Abel Pitashvar.
He said it.
Scriptures are quite explicit.
Yeah, but why would he say it? He said, it's fine. It's not considered sexual misconduct if you haven't taken your monastic vows. That's what he says right now.
It is considered.
Well, why would he say that?
Where did he say it?
No, he said it. I mean, unless they misquoted it. It's in a quotation. I have a
question. I know that this came out.
Right.
Now, if he were pressed to substantiate that, or did he say it to reach a certain audience, or for other reasons?
One can always use those.
Yeah, and this is, any teacher does that. The Buddha himself taught 4 schools of Buddhism. 3 of them are flatly wrong. So why did he teach them? We will study this subject, and we'll also study how to determine when he's doing it and when he's not doing it. Mm-hmm. There are rules for when he should do it, and we'll study that. It's a whole subject called Dharma. It's called the art of interpretation. Mm-hmm. And
it has to do with when you interpret a statement symbolically, or
when the Buddha says, kill your father.
How do you?
I mean, obviously that's metaphoric. Now, when are, in other circumstances, when is he saying what he is, and it's just a matter of time. But do you force it?
But that seems a rather monastic perspective.
I'm not saying monastic.
So for all celibates, there'll be no more samsara, because there'll be no more life.
I mean,
not true. No, not true. You could have all the sexual activity going on you want. No being had the karma to have to take another samsaric birth. You wouldn't give birth. It's not your doing, it's his karma.
Do you think you could finish this lesson and maybe have another class about this?
One last question.
Well, I was just going to say, with the view of emptiness, nothing is inherently good or bad, right?
Not true.
Pardon me?
Not true. Not in morality.
Not in morality. So no matter who it was, anyone who did one of these things that you're talking about, the effect would be the same.
No, I didn't say
or is it that to the vast majority of people who would be hearing this message, you're better off for the time being in the state that you're in right now to avoid certain activities?
People who are not,
because
not
of the state of your mind,
reach nirvana, if they want to establish the path to reach nirvana, must keep Sheshin and Temba on one of the 8 types of vows. If you don't have one of the 8 types of vows, you can just consider the 10 non-virtues. Avoid the 10 non-virtues.
Did you just infer that you can't attain nirvana without one of the 8 types of vows?
No, but he's defined the method of the path as watching your morality, and he happens to have mentioned the 8 types of vows. Is it impossible to reach nirvana without taking formal vows and keeping them? I'm not sure. I know that when you take a vow to keep something and you keep it, its nature completely changes. So, those 5 are not so hard.
Well, those 5 vows, are those the layman's vows?
Killing, no lying.
Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, and use of alcohol.
And you said that 2 and 3 is the layman vows, and they all incorporate the 5?
Yeah, 2 and 3, 2 is for ladies, 3 is for men. 5 vows for your life. And then they go on. Then you get into the realm of ordained people, and there's female novice, male novice, female advanced novice, female nun, and a full monk. And those are the 8.
And if you don't keep your sexual morality, can you advance higher sex?
What?
If you don't, follow that. If you sexually, if you're not, if you misconduct yourself.
I think, eventually you have to reach nirvana, you eventually have to keep your morality.
Yeah, but I mean, can you at least...
can you make progress in other places? Sure. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. You're supposed to work on the one which bothers you the most. But obviously, if you make advances in,
isn't there something that Tibetan Buddhist nuns can only get in Theravada tradition?
It's being researched by a committee right now.
But there has to be
whether or not that in our tradition we're going to accept
reviving it though, no?
No, it would be just picking up on a continuum that we weren't aware of until now. If it can be established that it was never broken in the last 1,100 years. No. Why did he mention morality? Why did he? There's three trainings, right? What are they?
Concentration.
Morality, concentration, and wisdom.
Reaching nirvana is the practice of removing your bad thoughts permanently. Why did he only mention morality? Doesn't it take all three things to remove your bad thoughts permanently?
Morality is the foundation.
Yeah, morality is like, what he means when he mentions morality only is that it's to imply the other two. You must have concentration, meditative concentration, and you must have wisdom. But he mentions morality, why? What's the relationship between morality and concentration?
You can't concentrate without morality.
You can't concentrate with something on your conscience, and you never will be able to. Okay?
Is that just a guilt thing? Or?
It's the nature of a bad deed. It interrupts the psychic being. You can't. He will not be able to achieve very high shamatha as long as he's got some bad deed that he has not purified.
So you got to do massive purification to really
get. That's
the
whole idea of the preparation for meditation. That's the whole point of doing those preliminaries before you meditate.
I mean, we've got a
bizarre. Great scope.
Well, that's fun. Can you summarize the medium scope? It's
medium real scope. We just had two steps. You know, find out what's.
Want it and get it.
Want it, that's life.
And how do you go about getting it?
Get it. He said, focus on your morality with watchfulness and with recollection. What he meant was, focus on your morality to develop a higher state of concentration, which allows you to see emptiness directly, which will stop your bad thoughts forever. That's nirvana. That's tantra. That's moksha. By the way, given the example of the person at work, it's quite simple. That's the answer. That's the practical application of that principle. He does something to harm you, and you stop reacting forever. So there's nothing to throw this into being, or to throw the perception of this into being, which is the same as throwing it into being. The wish to become a Buddha so that you can help all other living beings. To become a Buddha so that you can help all other living beings.
How to become a Buddha?
How to develop the wish to become a Buddha so that you can help all other living beings. I'll give it to you in 30 seconds or less.
Don't you have to develop the urge like in the middle scope first? You know, the middle
These are
scope.
All.
In the middle scope, you develop the urge and then act. Here, you don't have to develop the urge and then
this
act.
This is the urge, then you're going to have the act. Chungsem is only the urge.
Oh, I thought it was the act. Okay.
No.
This is the wish.
So what it is, mainly this. It's quite coldly logical. If it's true that your present moment of consciousness must be produced by the moment of consciousness in the moment before. Okay? If your consciousness here had to be the cause of your consciousness here, which is true, mind has to come from mind. Mind has to come from the mind of the moment before. The fact that you were aware has to come from the fact that you were aware a minute ago. If that's true, if it's true, don't say it's true. If it's true, then you had a past life.
Well, that's right, because it also has to be from the fact that you were aware 10 minutes ago simultaneously, right?
The awareness you had at the moment of conception had to be preceded by a principal cause consisting of a state of consciousness. We'll talk about it later. I mean, but that's the proof of formality. That's the only proof of formality. If that's true, then you've had countless former lives, and I can jump like that. If that's true, then I have been everything to you before, and you have been everything to me before. Mm. I've been your mother trillions of times. I've been your worst enemy trillions of times. Chöpa means the activities and meaning the activities of a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva activities. Oh, I'm sorry. How to train in the bodhisattva activities. How to learn how to act like a bodhisattva. Yeah. How to learn how to act like a bodhisattva. How to learn acting like a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva's activities have... No, this is Tibetan. Bodhisattva activities, there are two types. Basically two types. Do means non-secret, open. Okay. Open bodhisattva activity.
Meaning it is what it appears.
No. It's not tantra. Nak means tantra. Nak means tantra, and tantra means secret bodhisattva activities.
So tantra is, what is that, Sanskrit for secret?
It literally means a thread.
Tantra means thread?
Yeah, and it was comes from a thread that Brahmins used to lay around there. But there's a long story about it. So open bodhisattva activities and secret bodhisattva activities. We can't talk about this one.
No.
Well, we can see it, though.
Okay, this goes one hand.
So it literally refers to tantra.
The literal is mantra. Okay.
Right.
Nak means mantra.
But distinct from, say, things, doing things in such a way that your actual purpose in doing them may be hidden from the view of most people.
I'm not going to explain what secret means.
No, but I'm
and I'll tell you one thing, it's not what most people think.
No, I'm talking
more helpful. No, I'll go one step further. What I'm saying is that these activities are of such a nature that they are secret by their nature.
No, I'm not talking about that category. I'm talking about the previous category or a different category. When you say open activities, do you mean right there in the open, everybody can interpret it as being bodhisattva activity?
That's not what I mean by open. No.
Okay,
I mean that you don't need permission to practice them and you...
Non-secret.
It's a long story. Okay.
What were you going to say about Nak?
What I'm saying is that Nak is secret by nature. If you don't have the goodness to practice it, you can open all the books and someone can tell you everything that's in the books and you can hear everything that ever said anyone ever done in Nak, and nothing will happen. You won't see anything. If you don't have the proper training and the proper permission, authorization, and the proper practices and the proper lam rim in your heart, you can be around all the knock you want. You won't see anything. Nothing will happen. It doesn't matter. It's a secret by its nature. It's not that anyone has to hide it from you. You'll never see knock. Nothing will happen. You can desecrate all those tantric books you want by opening them and reading them, and nothing will happen to you.
So really the meaning of tantra and secrecy is that if you don't have the goodness and the training, it's secret, you won't...
It's secret by its nature. It will be hidden from you.
It's an elite awareness, then.
You need those other things. What are they? Understanding how to take a teacher, how to follow him. Understanding how lucky you are and why you should practice Dharma. Understanding that you will die. Understanding about the laws of karma that will throw you where they're going to throw you. Being fed up with this life. Understanding how nothing can make you happy. Taking the steps to get that are necessary to get out of this life, which are the three trainings, morality, concentration, and wisdom, seeing that everyone's been your mother, wanting to help them, and then undertaking the activities that are necessary to help them. If you don't have those as experiential attitudes, in the Lam Rim, it's taught us the general perfections, the six perfections. They are what?
Morality.
Generosity.
Giving.
Morality.
Like protecting someone from a mother is a form of giving. That's one kind of giving. So, okay, giving.
Morality.
Joyful
effort.
Patience.
Patience in the sense of a word that we don't have in English, which means not getting angry when the time comes. It doesn't mean being patient while the bus is coming. Patience has a lot of meanings in English. The third perfection is not getting angry when all the conditions are right. Someone has screamed at you at work, and you don't get angry. That's the third perfection. Number four?
Joyful effort.
Effort, which is defined as being happy about doing the right thing.
Concentration.
Tung Kangela Tro. Number five?
Concentration.
Meditative concentration. Shamatha, if you will.
Say that last one again. Vipassana?
Vipassana is the Pali, and it's a corruption of the Sanskrit Vipassana.
Which is wisdom.
Which is the highest form of wisdom. Now, since you asked, since it's your last question, I'm going to give you the definitions of shamatha and vipassana.
Oh.
So in the future, you'll always know if what somebody says is vipassana and samatha.
Okay. Can I ask one question? When you say concentration, does it only refer to samadhi? Is that the definition of concentration? Is samadhi concentration?
When they teach the last two perfections in the Lam Rim, the fifth one is always shamatha.
Which is the king of samadhi.
Perfection,
right?
Is called samten. And we went through that in the first class. Okay. Shini is defined as shamatha. Sorry. That's the Tibetan. Shamatha. S-H-A-M-A. I prefer T-A. The reason people spell it with T-H-A is not because it's the, but because it's a different Sanskrit T. And that's the only way to show it in English. And it's not necessary to show it in English because you're not showing that T. You can't show that T. T by itself is that T. Okay. Some people misspell it with just S-A-M because somebody misspelled it diacritical, and it's the wrong spelling. Okay. It's S-H-A-M-A-T-A. If you want to add T-H-A, I won't mark it off, but it's not correct. Okay. Because so many people do it. Okay. By the power of being in deep meditation, one pointedly on its object. Can I adjust that?
Yeah.
Change it.
That single-mindedness, I'm going to start over. Okay? That single-minded state of mind.
Okay.
That'll come later. Okay. I'll start over, okay? That single-mindedness.
That.
T-H-A-T, single-mindedness. Sorry, I don't have to. That single-mindedness. Which is imbued with I-M-B-U-E-D. You can say full of. The exceptional that wisdom which is full of exceptional bliss of practiced ease by power of what did we call that kind of analysis? Individual analysis. By power of the individual analysis of its object, comma. By the way, if you've never heard of individual analysis, ask somebody who was in the last course. So it's not really morality at all, in a sense. It's collecting personal goodness.
Accumulating merit. Same idea.
Yeah, but it's called morality, okay? So in the text, Tsongkhapa is talking about three moralities. I don't want you to get confused. You'll see it in the text. The third kind of morality is called morality for the sake of all sentient beings. And that's to do the other two kinds of morality, not for yourself, but for the sake of others.
I'm sorry, this is part of three?
Yeah, the morality number three is called morality for the sake of all other beings. And it's to do the first two kinds, you know, but with the motivation to help others, and not out of a selfish motivation. And I'm sorry to overload you, but we had to get to the whole Lamrim in
2. This is the end of Class 10.